Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Mornings with Carmen. And you can probably tell from the sound of my voice that I am not Carmen LaBurge.
No.
I am not. I am Dr. Peter Kapster, and delighted to be in this week for Carmen LaBurge, who is enjoying a much-needed vacation. It's a good time for vacation as the end of school in many districts, certainly around the state of Minnesota and around the country as well. And so for those of you listening, you're probably figuring out what does summer look like for you and your children now, whether you're getting them off to a daycare while you continue your job, or you're trying to decide if you should keep them on their regular rhythm for school. But delighted to be joined with all of you wherever you are listening from. And Paul Perreault, happy to be joined in studio with you again this morning.
Well, it's good to have you back in, even though I miss Carmen already. But
we are only 45 seconds into this, Paul, but understandable on every possible level. So, you know, it's fun. We were with some neighbors last night that came over for a bonfire, and we got a chance to stay up late, and their kids were over until late. And it really called to mind, Paul, and it's relevant for the morning show like this too, is that Hebrews 10:24-25 passage. And I think about that passage a lot in light of today's sort of fragmented lives and the busyness factor in which we find ourselves just racing. And of course, Hebrews 10:24 says this to believers, that let us not give up the habit of meeting together, to spur each other on towards love and good deeds, and to encourage one another. And there is something about face-to-face presence with each other, whether it's over a bonfire with neighbors like that, that are fellow believers, sitting in studio here with you this morning. We need that face-to-face time, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We live such disconnected lives, and actually I'm learning more and more as I'm getting older. Boy, having face-to-face time, actually just having time to even just shake a person's hand is so important.
And if we spend an hour in church, and we should be going to church on a Sunday morning somewhere, but sometimes we don't even get that face-to-face fellowship touch when we're worshiping together or we're listening to
the word
together.
We just kind of worship side by side instead of together.
Right, and with activities and everything that is sort of crashing within us on a Sunday morning, sometimes we don't hang around church as much anymore. So it's really these times together that, boy, it just feels like a little bit of balm to the soul.
It really does, especially when you're really talking about life with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you're listening this morning, I do hope it feels just like what Paul said, as doing life together and a balm to the soul, and that we're really gathering together as believers from all over the country to consider how we can encourage one another in terms of love and good deeds. And our first guest here in just a moment, Dr. Nick Pitts, qualifies in that category as well. Nick is the host of he's the host of a radio show every Wednesday that is on called Point of View. He also is the executive director of the Institute of Global Engagement for Dallas Baptist University, and writes news each morning on the Daily Briefing at debriefing.net. And so just a moment, we'll be back with Dr. Nick Pitts to cover some of the news items of the day. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your substitute host for the week, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line at this time by Dr. Nick Pitts, who writes the Daily Briefing at thebriefing.net. It's a great source for news from a Christian standpoint. Good morning, Nick.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Doing well this morning. Summer's in full swing here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, that's for sure. The roads are quite emptier than they normally are when there's a lot of school traffic on the road. How's life down in Texas?
You know, I think we've had some storms came through yesterday, so a lot of us are still without power. So it's interesting. I remember in your first segment, you were talking about kind of gathering together, and it was so interesting last night with all the power out. There were so many going through my neighborhood. So many people were outside barbecuing and cooking simply because the power is out inside. So they made their way outside. So I guess one of the good things that happened is just had a lot of people embracing community last night.
That is, that is a nice byproduct of that, because it's one of those things where we just really don't have that backyard time together as much as we used to.
No. But one of the beautiful things that can come out of just some unfortunate circumstances, and we can see some glimmers out of that as well. So can't complain.
Love it. Well, lots of news to cover, that's for sure. And, of course, there's all kinds of news coming from the southern border. And I have to admit, Nick, that as some of the news began to emerge on the crisis that's happening at the border, maybe, I don't know, 6 months to a year ago, felt like I didn't really know what to trust. I didn't know what news source to look at. You would watch one news source, and it was just this incredible crisis, another news source, and there was really nothing happening. But it sure seems like the objective numbers, as they're coming out now, really do demonstrate that there are record numbers coming to the border. And you've covered this quite a bit, so tell us a little bit about what's happening.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, Peter. There's at least 1,900 miles of the border. So if you're a particular news agency, you can see that there's a lot of border to cover, and there's a story that can be told from both sides of the perspective. But what must be heard right now is we're experiencing record number of individuals that are kind of making their way to the southern border. Interestingly enough, they're coming through Mexico, not necessarily coming from Mexico, which is an important distinction to make. The Mexican economy is doing so well right now that there are more individuals since 2008 that have left the U.S. to go back to Mexico rather than have come to Mexico to the U.S. But as we look at some of the undocumented immigrants that are making their way to the southwest border, last month alone, 144,000 undocumented immigrants encountered border officials at the border. This is the largest monthly total in 13 years. And so that's a staggering number in and of itself. And it marks the third month in a row that more than 100,000 immigrants were taken into custody at the border. This is a surge we haven't seen, like I said, in over 13 years.
And when you see this kind of surge, Nick, one of the things that, of course, is going to be part of it is a distinct humanitarian crisis. And in part of your news notes, there's something that I hadn't considered or I didn't know what was happening, but it was terribly troubling to me. And that is how often women have been assaulted on the way to the border.
It is unbelievable what's happening there, because, again, what we know to be true is that whenever there's a demand, there's going to be a supply that comes with it. And so one of the things that we're continuing to see is there's a great demand to try to get into the border and what are trying to get into our country. And with this flock of migration that's happening, there are evil individuals that are seeing this demand, and they're starting to utilize it for their own evil purposes. Like you mentioned, there's specifically two things that are very troubling to me and that should be troubling for any Christian that sees the dignity and value and the image of God that's been placed onto every individual. One being that women are assaulted on the way to the border, like you mentioned. There's a study that indicates that 1 in 3 women have been sexually assaulted as they make their way to the border. Many of these women are coming with children, and because they're fleeing such dire circumstances, they're willing to endure great lengths and travails in order to be able to make their way to the border, with many of them suffering sexual harassment. Just absolutely tragic. But then the second thing that we're starting to find out, according to the Department of Homeland Security officials, is that babies are actually being rented at the border so that if you can have a baby with you, you can make your way through the process a little bit quicker. And what they're doing is once they get past the border security officials, they're sending the baby back in order that they can just be viciously cycled through this system. So your politics aside, whether we want to determine this is a crisis or not, what we know to be true is that there is some great harm that's being done at the border right now, and there's a great need for order as well as justice to happen.
Well, and you're right too, Nick, and I appreciated some of the words that you did and some of the show prep back and forth, but you're right that as Christians, we should protect our borders, but also consider our neighbors. The Good Samaritan didn't neglect the beaten man, but cared for him. He didn't bring him back to his home, but he did restore him back to health. We don't have to let them all in, but we should at least consider how we might help them out. And Nick, what do we do when some of these things are happening on the other side of the border to maybe assist in this crisis?
You know, there's a we're living in a false dichotomy right now where the cultural and the political narrative has said that we have to do one of either two things. We either, one, have to let everybody in, or two, we have to let no one in. And for the Christian, the political narrative cannot shape our Christian understanding of what we must do. And so this is a narrowing effect that's forced us into one of two decisions. And I say we just reject both of those decisions. As we look back upon the biblical narrative, it's impossible for us not to be able to read that we are to extend compassion, kindness, hospitality, graciousness to the foreigner. And so that doesn't necessarily require us to allow everybody in, but it does recognize that much has been given to us here in the U.S., and we have a great opportunity for us to extend compassion to those on the other side. was having lunch with a group up in Denver two days ago, and they were talking about some of the humanitarian effort that's being done through World Vision and other intermediary organizations to really try to help in that effort, because the government has such a big hand. And they do have a role to play, but there are some great nonprofit and NGO organizations that are doing phenomenal work to be able to be that slight touch to show the gracious hand of God to these individuals to help them in their time of need.
And that really, there is a responsibility for believers that goes beyond civil responsibility in terms of helping people, as you said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nick, it's fascinating to me that we are sort of polarized in either of these two camps. And it seems to me that if a politician could come out with some sort of responsible, cogent argument that would suggest we really do need to have strong borders and really emphasize that, because ISIS was trying to make their way through here.
Oh, yeah.
Recently, we see that. But at the same time, recognize the crisis. But you're so right. If you're depending on which side of the political aisle you're on, you really stay within one narrative.
Yeah, we've been sold a bill of goods that we say that this is mutually exclusive. If you're for open borders, you can't have security. But if you're for security, you can't have individuals come in. And again, we can, as Christians, we can hold both to be true. We recognize the truth from 1 Timothy 5 that we need to protect our family and protect our loved ones. And we need to recognize from Romans 13 that the government has been put into place in order to restrain evil and enact justice. Yes and amen, we can't have that security. But on the flip side as well, we can be compassionate as well. We recognize that this country has been given much, and much is to be expected from it. And so, yes, we can continue to extend compassion like we saw with the Marshall Plan, like we continue to see with all our diplomatic work throughout the world, that when we're investing in the world, we know it to be true that that investment is going to come back and have a rich return on us as well.
I'm talking with Dr. Nick Pitts this morning from the Institute for Global Engagement at Dallas Baptist University. And Nick, we'll take a short break when we come back. Lots more to cover, including the fact that former Vice President Joe Biden and Democratic candidate has recently reversed his position on federal funding of abortion. And I have to ask you about the very good news that maybe coffee actually is neutral, if not good for us. So more to come with Dr. Nick Pitts here next on Mornings with Carmen.
I'm smelling coffee, birds are singing just outside.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. We're chatting with Nick Pitts this morning about some of the headlines of the day. And Nick, that coffee intro that Paul Perot put together there represents some very,
very good
news.
I didn't do it. That was Chris Rice.
Well, it was Chris Rice, but you were the one that, of course, you know, prophetically brought it into play there.
Prophetically.
And Nick, you know, I'm all about the echo chamber when it comes to news. So I only read news that I agree with already. And I sort of discourage any other form of it. And I see that a new study shows coffee, even 25 cups a day, isn't bad. Bad for your heart after all. I gotta admit, I've never been so aggressive as to get to 25 cups, but it's really good news in case I choose to go that direction.
I could not agree more. Me and 64% of Americans drink a cup of coffee every day. I find it to be a reminder of God's goodness and grace in this broken world when we taste and see that the Lord and Folgers or whatever your coffee brand is good.
Nick, I'm pretty sure the old psalm that you're referencing there is that might be a Living Bible translation at best.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you do reference the Metallica song, Give Me Fuel, Give Me Fire, Give Me That Which I Desire, and that sure seems to relate to coffee, doesn't it?
Oh, that is the truth. That is the truth. Oh, what a great time to be alive.
Oh, it really is. Well, there's lots more news to cover here. We see that the leading Democratic candidate, though, in the polls, his lead seems to be shrinking on the Democratic side of stuff. But Joe Biden recently did a pretty significant flip on his long-term position on the Hyde Amendment, which prevents federal funding for abortion. And he came out and said that he affirmed that amendment, but then he flipped pretty heavily here recently.
Yeah, New York Times did some great investigating this weekend and did some pretty significant reporting to indicate that there have been a couple of individuals within his camp that pressured him pretty significantly to make this move. You know, dating back to his beginnings of his time in public life in the late 70s, early 80s, he had always rooted his decision to be against the Hyde Amendment his original position with the Hyde Amendment. To the ban on federal funding of abortion. He really rooted it in his Catholic faith, which was very encouraging for believers. But then just over the past couple of weeks, he's just really started to feel pressure from certain constituencies within his kind of base and within his circle. But what's interesting enough, though, is the recent poll found that 47% of Americans identify as pro-life and 47% identify as pro-choice. if anything, the more science that continues to come out, the more understanding that we have of what abortion actually is, it really turns the tide on this desire for abortions on demand. And so kind of that approach of incrementalism, the more that we continue to put out, the greater support there is for the pro-life side, appears to be working. But despite that, former Vice President Biden continues to kind of move leftward, which isn't, especially for the pro-lifers, isn't necessarily encouraging, to say the least.
Yeah, that science of viability. And I think about it, Nick, when I was growing up, that for a baby to be viable outside of the womb might have been at 32, 34 weeks. And even then it was touch and go. And we're back to maybe even 18 to 20 weeks sometimes that the children can survive outside the womb. And that really does create a lot of dissonance for those who would have been inside of abortion to say, hang on just a minute. There's a viability factor that it goes all the way back to 1820. There's a human being inside, and science really is one of the most profound arguments for life these days.
Yeah, I mean, we literally last week, we were all celebrating on both sides of the aisle. A child that was born at 21 weeks was extremely malnourished when it came out, was literally the size of an apple, came out of the womb, and we just celebrated last week the fact that it is now surviving. This little girl is thriving, and she's back home with her parents out of California. And what's so fascinating is we can celebrate this type of news on the one hand from both sides of the aisle, but then on the other side, what we continue to see is this radical push towards abortion. And especially as believers, it's really important for us to be able to see is that what we know it to be true from Proverbs 31, that we need to raise our voice to be a voice for the voiceless. And it's pointing towards those type of articles. It's pointing towards those type of stories that it's important for us to humanize this rather than just talk about it as a particular issue. As what we know from just even what we were joking around with in the previous time, that coffee is just it's a good thing because we're humanizing it. We can remember the experience. We can taste and see it. And with the abortion debate, one of the things that the key points of the pro-choice side is it tries to dehumanize the other side. It tries to separate it, tries to move it further and further away from the actual experience. It's increasingly important for us to be able to point to the humanizing effects of what abortion really is and help individuals to be able to know that that's not simply just an option for you. That's an opportunity to be able to love and care for the very image of God that's on display.
Boy, it sure is interesting to see all the different debates going on either side of it, Nick. And I know that it's always been there, but it sure seems like in the last 6 months or so that everywhere I turn, there's a new headline that's coming out about abortion and especially about how states are trying to figure out what their policies are going to be. I woke up this morning and Paul Perot had a headline on my desk that said new Texas law bans local businesses with abortion providers. And so there's a law coming in your neck of the woods on September 1st that says that there are businesses that can't do a business any longer with clinics that provide abortions. And be curious your perspective on this. Are we heading towards this sort of a hardening of lines where some states are going to become terribly restrictive and other states are going to become terribly permissive in the sense that we see what happened in New York and the celebration of pretty difficult realities when it comes to abortion? And there's kind of a hardening in our country on either side.
Unfortunately, I think this is where we're going. One of the things that's been so beautiful and good and true that's happened in the pro-life community over the past 10, 15 years is we've continued to see, even though it's been galvanized at the national level, there's been great progress that's been made at the state level. That over the past 3 years, we've seen a drastic decrease in the number of abortions that are happening here in the U.S. And that's due in large part to a lot of the bills that are being passed at the state level, being able to have access to hospitals, to raise the standards of these abortion clinics. It's just good and true things that we know to be true, that abortion is a medical procedure, that we should expect abortion clinics to have particular standards so that the care of the mother is taken is seen in light of that. And so if I was a forecaster, I would just say that we're going to continue to see this hardening at the state level. But what we know to be true, though, as many of these laws that are beginning to go into place, as more of the humanizing and science begins to teach us what we already know from a theological perspective, I think we're going to continue to see that abortion might not be outlawed, but it will be unthinkable at a particular time.
That's Dr. Nick Pitts from the Daily Briefing. You can read his work at thebriefing.net. And before we run, Nick, is it summertime for you as a professor as well? I know for me as I teach and we head into summer, it's kind of disorienting. You go from a whole lot to a whole lot of nothing. So is that where you're at right now?
I wish. So unfortunately, Dallas doesn't trust me too much to do any teaching. So all I do is just go around and speak and write. And so I am on the road, I feel like, is much more over the summer.
Well, I love it. Delightful to speak with you this morning. Thanks for joining us on Mornings with Carmen. We'll take a break here. When we come back for the second half of this hour, we'll be joined by Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News and talk about some of what's happening in Iran and how American policy may be impacting the persecution of Christians. Boy, Paul, pretty troubling news coming out of the Dominican Republic recently, including some events last night that involved a local baseball player who is a Hall of Famer. He was with the Minnesota Twins for quite a while.
And of course, I forgot that.
Yeah, of course, the Twins traded him to the Boston Red Sox for, I think, a bag of rocks at that point. But he certainly made a name for himself with the Red Sox.
And Ortiz,
David Ortiz. And the news out of the Dominican is he was at a nightclub last night and some gunfire went off and he was shot through the back and it exited through the stomach. And he went to the emergency room, obviously. Mm-hmm. And said to the doctors that, hey, I'm a good man. Please let me live. So serious case involving a pretty visible Major League Baseball player.
Yeah. And you were telling me before that there's been a lot of interesting things happening down in Dominican Republic as far as U.S. tourists.
Yeah. Some of these all-inclusive resorts where people are showing up, they in the last couple of months, they have been maybe taking a drink out of the minibar. It has been the common thread.
Yeah.
And four people have died over the past couple of months. And they fall ill almost immediately upon taking this drink. And, of course, the Dominican Republic minister came out yesterday and basically said, no, it's absolutely all coincidence. This just happened to be these one-off sort of situations, circumstance. Though it's factual, it's all circumstance. But boy, when you see something like this happen four times in a row, I would say there must be something else going on here.
Okay, I'm changing my travel plans.
I was going to say I would definitely have some caution before I'd head down to the Dominican Republic again. Well, we've got Ruth Kramer on the line already from Mission Network News. Going to cover a lot of different things from the standpoint of Christianity and a global perspective, but I also have to ask Ruth about some recent running that she's been doing. I saw some pictures in which she had some medals around her neck from winning some competition. So we'll ask Ruth about that next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Is Israel's response to terrorism disproportionate? This is Jim Garlow. When Israel is bombarded from Gaza with thousands of rockets shot indiscriminately into its most populated cities rather than at military targets, and when Israel returns fire with pinpoint airstrikes aimed at the originators of the strikes, Israel is then accused in the press of disproportionate response. Indeed it is. Disproportionately less. If Israel had responded proportionally, there would be no Gaza left today. In reality, Israel is not only the most civilized and advanced nation in the Middle East, but unlike its Arab neighbors, it sends humanitarian and medical aid around the world in times of crisis. It is literally a global first responder. You won't hear any of this in the media, so carry the news in person. There's more at wellversed.world.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
And, of course, that is the intro for Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News, who does such a great job covering Christianity from a global perspective. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning.
Now, I understand you are a bit sore because you have been competing in some pretty significant events here recently. Tell us about it.
Well, I'm part of an old fart running club, actually. I'm a master senior sprinter, and that just means that I'm over 50 and I'm still sprinting. And so yesterday I raced at the Michigan Championships for USATF, and I had some pretty good times. I was very pleased with how those things turned out. And that helps me just prepare for next week's meet, which is the National Senior Games.
I love it. So, Ruth, I'm curious. I saw a photo sort of the after part of the events here. And are you sore from the running or are you sore from lugging around that amount of metal from around your neck? Because you were adorned with a lot of different winning medals here.
Yeah, it's complicated. But when you get to this age, they separate you by age groups because it's an unfair advantage. As you age, your muscles just don't respond the same way. So the older you get, the slower you get. It's not fair to make you compete against people that are 15, 20 years younger than you are. So I took second in my age group, but first for the association from Michigan. And so I don't know if that helps explain it, but I ran two events, so I got 4 medals.
That, yeah, pretty impressive stuff. And my understanding is that you in Michigan, that there was a little bit of trouble from your neighbor to the south there in Ohio. Pretty typical stuff with you guys, right?
Yeah, well, there's a gal that I race against who's from the Ohio Association, the Ohio USATF, U.S. Track and Field Association. And she beats me every time. But I was closer to losing to her this time. I mean, I was only like 2 steps behind her. And so I'm going to get her this year.
I love it. Well, I used to run track and field, Ruth, and when they were all running past me, I thought there's no chance I'm going to get faster, so I just hung it up at that point. But lots to cover here this morning. I know there's some headlines coming out of Iran that I've been following a little bit, and hard to believe that we would actually get into a military conflict with Iran, but the tensions sure are ratcheting up, and there is some suggestion among some camps that maybe the United States use some sanctions to try to look for some relief on the persecution of Christians. Tell us about what's happening there.
Well, there's always going to be a number of ministries and organizations, humanitarian, religious watchdog groups, that are going to try to encourage some action at the State Department level regarding sanctions to try to, I guess, force countries that are not following a certain set of guidelines as far as it goes to how people are treated, whether or not they have access to being able to practice their faith without persecution and that kind of thing. Iran is one of those countries where you have a lot of those kinds of petitions going, where you're having a lot of encouragement from those groups at the State Department level to try to put some pressure on the government to shift what they've been doing. Iran is in the top 10 on the world watch list that Open Doors puts out there for the persecution of places where it's toughest to be a Christian. And this is just kind of following some of what we were expecting to see from Iran. The crisis is getting very serious. So there's a lot of things that are being done to try to work around the issues that exist between the countries. The thing that is very interesting, you know, aside from petitions that you have coming out, say, from Open Doors or International Christian Concern, which is encouraging believers to get in touch with their politicians, to get in touch with other advocates, and really put some pressure using the sanctions to get Iran to comply with religious freedom issues. The people from Middle East Concern are kind of coming at it from a different perspective. Just keeping in mind the dynamic of what happens in Iran and what they're telling people in Iran, something like the sanctions being used to force some compliance with more religious freedoms actually feeds into the narrative that the government in Iran is touting. And it may make things a little bit more difficult for already oppressed Christians. And that's what Middle East Concern is just saying. You know, they might work. Targeted sanctions actually might work. But at the same time, we need to be very mindful of the secondary impact of what that might actually mean for believers on the ground there, keeping in mind that there are a lot of disillusioned Iranians and they're looking for a source of hope. So you have other ministries that are coming in like Heart for Iran, Mohabbat TV, Sat7, PARS, that are broadcasting the gospel into the country and people are responding. So Iran's church, for the size of the country that it is growing faster than any other church in the world. And so people, again, they're searching for hope and they're finding it in Christ. The church is under pressure. It is severe pressure. So, you know, it's not to be, we're not making light of the situation there. But also realizing that these issues between the U.S. and Iran, we have to be careful about how we approach that. In trying to help, we might actually be harming more, just because the narrative in a lot of Middle Eastern countries is that Christianity is seen as a Western religion. So as you see the sanctions and things like that being pushed by the U.S. into the country on behalf of the religious freedom issues, it ties too closely to kind of reinforcing that idea that's being put out there by the regime propagandists. So I guess what Middle East Concern is really suggesting is that pray for wisdom, ask God to really just miraculously move in these situations, and pray for the faith of the believers that are in Iran. A lot of them are very isolated, and they actually think they're the only Christian in the country. So asking God to connect these believers so that there is a body, and for creative ways that the ministries that are getting the hope of Christ into the country, would be able to connect these people and maybe disciple them and ground them a little bit better.
Yeah, it's a fascinating argument to suggest that if we go ahead and levy sanctions upon Iran, that they would then use that as propaganda to show that Christianity really is against the people. But it is interesting, too, with the advent of the Internet and the age of information, that to control the people, you have to control the information. And I'm guessing that increasingly less so is the Iranian regime able to control all the flow of information. Thus, Christianity really can make its way in.
Absolutely. I mean, they can do a lot of things. Sat-7 PARS for the Farsi speakers has been blocked at different points, but they can't be blocked all the time. And the same thing has happened with Mohabbat TV, which is a Farsi ministry. It's a Farsi TV channel that looks at all of the issues from a biblical perspective. It is out and out. It's a ministry, and they've had issues with being blocked as well. But again, it's not something that can that just stays in that static position. And so the hope of Christ is getting into Iran, and people are responding much more than I think people, the believers and the people in the ministries were anticipating. So when they're praying for an abundant harvest, God is answering.
It's fascinating stuff to cover from that perspective around the world. It's Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. Ruth, we'll take a short break. We come back. Let's change the conversation to over some of the Christian experience in Algeria. Similar, though different, and it's a classic example of how people, when they have power, are pretty reticent to give it up. So more to come with Ruth Kramer on Mornings with Carmen here in just a moment. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host for the day here, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined by Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. And Ruth, there is some news about the Christian experience out of Algeria, but before we get into that a bit, I confess that when we moved overseas to the United Kingdom, that my geography was, let's just say, quite limited. I barely knew where any of these countries were. So give us a sense, where is Algeria in terms of its global location?
We'll say North Africa.
North Africa.
If you go to the continent, you know, and you look in the northern part of the continent, you'll see where Algeria is. And you'll see this proximity to other countries where you've seen some similar difficulties coming up throughout those areas.
And it's fascinating to see in that area of the world, like many areas of the world, that there can be a lot of corruption when it comes to the political elections. And that what we saw that recently. And that does have some implications for the Christians there.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we're talking about is an ouster of the president, Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who actually stepped down from power in early April. He'd been in power for 20 years, and finally the issues with corruption and all of the protests that took place kind of pushed things to a head, and the military stepped in and kind of removed the president there. So if you were familiar with the situation that occurred in Egypt a number of years ago, maybe 7-8 years ago, it's very similar to that. I mean, it seems like it's running kind of a parallel course, actually. So you have a leader that's removed by the military. The military says, we're going to set up a situation where we're going to make sure that we can have free elections, and we're going to do blah, 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 blah. But first, we're going to have an interim president, and we're going to set up a government and a constitutional council and all of this kind of stuff. And then the people are saying, I don't trust the guy that you put in charge to be the interim leader because he's not going to give up the power. So the protests continued. And really what we're looking at in terms of like last Friday, that would be what, June 7th, something like that. Was the 16th Friday in a row. So 16 weeks of protests that have turned the country on its ear. And in this case, the people were saying, we just want to clean the whole house. We don't want anybody from the old guard because we don't trust that you won't be a puppet of the regime of the oligarchy that's led to so much oppression in this country. So now you have the situation where you have the protests, the state of emergency continuing, and then the Constitutional Council actually called off the presidential election that was going to be held on the 4th of July. At that point, the Algerians are saying, okay, so now you've called off the presidential elections. What else is going to happen? We don't trust what you're going to do. And that just set up even more with the uproar. The decisions that were being made by the interim government. So there is the backdrop for all of the issues. And when you look at it, with the Christians involved here, they're already marginalized in this country. They've already been feeling a lot of pressure from the government there. And it really stems back to like 13 years ago, where you had a law, a presidential decree, that regulates the worship of non-Muslim communities. And that has increased the pressure of existing church buildings and the Protestant Church of Algeria. And so what we've seen over the last recent months, actually, is a lot of church closures and the seizure of property. So if you look at, say, Middle East Concerns coverage on all of these specific things, you'll see church closed, church open, church closed, church open. And sometimes it's the same church that's going back and forth, back and forth, and back and forth. Their paperwork isn't going through. They're not getting the permits that they're supposed to be getting. And it's just one more thing on top of all of the other chaos that's going on in the government. And now what you're looking at is the Christians are saying, we're already marginalized, so we have to be very, very careful that we're not going to be made the scapegoat for everything that's going on for whoever does come in power. And that's what Middle East Concern is just saying. Let's be prayerful for our brothers and sisters in Christ in Algeria. They have no idea what's happening with this latest thing on the election being canceled. It's anybody's guess as what's going to happen next.
Ruth, one more story to get to quickly, and that's some of the what Christians are experiencing in Ghana. And Ghana is not a primarily Islamic country like Algeria and Iran that we just referenced. But if we look at the attacks done on Christians there and sort of triangulate those three experiences, is there a commonality among them about the way Christians are perceived and how they're targeted in these countries?
Well, let me back up. The situation in Ghana is a carryover from what's been happening in Burkina Faso. So Burkina Faso lies south of like Niger and Mali and some of those areas where you have an insurrection, like an Al-Qaeda kind of a thing going. And Burkina Faso's had a number of attacks, like four attacks, 4 weeks, four pastors targeted, and, you know, dozens of people who've been injured in these church attacks. So Burkina Faso has been dealing with this, and their church body is a little bit panicked because of the situation, how rapidly the violence has escalated. Ghana's looking at Burkina Faso, their neighbor. They share a border, and the proximity to Niger and Mali and all of those things that have come across the borders with Al-Qaeda. And they're saying, we need to be ready because what happened to Burkina Faso, we don't want that happening here. So for the first time ever, the Ghanaian Christians are looking at this and saying, we have to examine our security. We have to examine the people that are coming through. And the partners that are working there are just saying, let's be praying wisdom for the Ghanaian Christians that they don't let fear be the thing that stops ministry, that they don't get suspicious of every person that crosses, you know, into their church and say, who are you? What are you doing here? Obviously, security is an issue. But for the believers that are encountering this for the first time, wisdom also needs to be part of that dialogue.
Yeah, there sure is a lot happening in terms of the commonality of Christian experience. And Ruth, it's one of those things that as you live in the United States and you, I'm sure, appreciate the freedoms we have to express our religious experience, that it's really different than our brothers and sisters around the world, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we just we take a lot of things for granted because we don't encounter that kind of resistance the way that our brothers and sisters around the world do.
So for the rest of the day now, that getting back to the track conversation, are you going to go run for a bit or do you need to give the body a rest for a few days?
No, I've got intervals today. Woo! and it'll be three days of hard workout this week, and then I'm going to take a couple days off for rest, get a good deep tissue massage before I travel, and then, yeah, we'll see what happens next week.
Well, good luck. We'll be following your progress there, and thanks for joining us here again on Mornings with Carmen. It's always fascinating to get perspective from our brothers and sisters around the world.
Thanks for having me.
Take a short break and wrap up the first hour of our show here for Monday, June 10th on Mornings with Carmen. So, Paul Perreault, some lighter headlines from today in history here for the 10th of June. Exactly.
And history lesson.
1985, a Doonesbury cartoon strip portrayed Frank Sinatra as a friend of the mafia. Was this the start of that association?
Oh, no. That there were always hints that that might be the case, but nobody talked about it.
Yeah, well, I love
and
it.
And so when he actually did that,
yeah.
I remember back then, it was like, oh, boy, a lot of newspapers didn't want to be hit by the mafia.
Well, of course, but it did say that 800 newspapers did carry the cartoon, but they did have a disclaimer on it.
Exactly.
To
That's
your
the
point.
Way they got around it. This is Doonesbury's doing. This is Doonesbury's doing, not us. So
I love it. Well, and we see that in 2016, ice hockey legend Gordie Howe, and of course, with the Stanley Cup at three games apiece right now between the Blues and the Bruins, it's going to be a pretty big Game 7 coming up. But he died at the age of 88 just about 3 years ago. He's one of the greatest ice hockey players of all time. Is hockey something that's pretty big around the country these days, or is it still pretty regional to the Midwest and maybe north of the border?
It's crazy. I have friends down in Nashville who are big Predator fans, and you have teams like the Anaheim Ducks. You got teams in Florida. I mean, it's nationwide.
I mean, I think, where did they get the ice time? Because here in Minnesota, there's so many hockey players.
Something called refrigeration.
Oh, really? They can do that inside, from what I understand. Really, this must be a new technology of which I have not heard, Paul Perreault. But I certainly think about the ice time problems that we have in the States. I know many of my friends, they have their boys and girls in hockey, and they're sometimes up at 5 o'clock in the morning just to get a little ice time here. It really is, it's a pretty popular sport.
Okay, I spent like 6 years up in Fargo. It's insane. I mean, that's hockey central. I mean, hockey moms, the whole hockey thing. People live hockey. After all, well, come on, you're talking Fargo. There's ice there 9 months out of the year. Come on, you got to do something with it.
Yeah, if you're in Fargo listening this morning, can you please text the studio at 877-933-2484 and let us know if ice out in the lakes has actually happened in Fargo. One more really quickly here, Paul Perreault. In 2004, music legend Ray Charles died in his home in Los Angeles. You know, he came from a time before all of the internet music and all of the YouTube videos, and so he really was from a time in which there were icons in music.
And he was amazing. Yeah. His America the Beautiful is still one of the best renditions out there.
Yeah, he really, in a time in civil rights movement in our country too, he and people like Stevie Wonder really made an impact in helping solve some of the reconciliation conversations we had. Well, great first hour of the show with Ruth Kramer, as well as Dr. Nick Pitts. And coming up at the top of hour two, we're going to be joined by one of our favorites, Ed Stetzer. And Ed and I have a lot to cover, including some quote-unquote controversy of a pretty major pastor, David Blatt, praying for our president recently. And there sure was quite a bit of back and forth, as you would imagine, on Twitter. So more to come here on hour two with Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LeBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.